CJSF is diverse, independent, and yours. Uniquely curated programming by our hosts maintains an independent voice among the masses. You keep CJSF independent.
Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. We at New Dimensions thank you for your support. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
The late and most respected American philosopher Ralph Waldo Emerson once said of the Bhagavad Gita, "I owed a magnificent day to the Gita. It was the first of books. It was as if an empire spoke to us, nothing small or unworthy, but large, serene, consistent, the voice of an old intelligence, which in another age and climate had pondered and thus disposed of the same questions which exercise us." The Gita is about 2,500 years old, and it's an old text that is a divine song, which is one of the most trusted guides for happiness, meditation, and spiritual growth. It unfolds as a dialogue of master and disciple, a friendly chat between Prince Arjuna, a warrior and a highly evolved spiritual seeker, and God incarnate Lord Krishna. It unfolds poetically and serves as a reflection of our own internal battlefield of the soul. Today we'll be exploring the profound wisdom of this sacred text with our guest, Dr. Isaac Bentwich. Dr. Isaac Bentwich is a longtime practitioner and teacher of yoga and meditation. Trained as a physician in Western and Ayurvedic medicine, he founded three life science technology companies, leading revolutions in medicine, genomics, and environment conservation. Dr. Bentwich lives in Israel and is the translator of Gita, a timeless guide for our time. Join us for the next hour as we explore the profound wisdom of this ancient text from India with our guest, Dr. Isaac Bentwich. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. May I call you Isaac?
Yeah, absolutely.
Isaac, welcome to New Dimensions. I would love this book. I've kind of avoided it through the years because I thought, oh, this is just about a battle, and God is saying it's okay to go to battle and so forth. And it just never really interests me. And then when I got this book, it put a whole different flavor on it. And I was just wondering if you could help us talk about why and how the Gita, we'll call it the Gita,
yes.
G-I-T-A, I'll spell that for people, Gita, is relevant in these days.
Well, as you've indicated, the Gita was this dialogue between a prince and his charioteer, his friend, his teacher, and God incarnate, as they're about to embark into a battle which the prince did not want from vicious family members. And it is in this freeze frame, as it were, just as they're about to go into battle, with the prince sharing with his friend and having this, as you aptly put it, this friendly chat with God. God, what is this life about? What about the suffering? What do I do with the crisis in my life? Now, he has a sizable crisis of going into battle. Why is it relevant here? Because, in a sense, we all have our battlefields of life, in career, in parenting, in relationships, even the battle between our spiritual life and the rest of life. And so we actually are sort of sitting on Arjuna's, on the prince's shoulder, and it is an invitation to have our friendly chat with God, relating to the challenges in our life. I always think of the Gita, and this may sound funny, I think of the Gita as an autobiography, your autobiography, my autobiography. As we listen to it, we identify with the prince and hear him voicing our, we are the prince or princess of this journey. And it is also, and this again may sound like a funny statement to make, it's a sort of a spiritual cliffhanger.
Right.
It keeps you at the edge of your seat. Once you get into the hang of it, what's he going to ask next? These are questions that I am voicing, and the dialogue is with the inner voice of my soul in this dialogue. And so it's not external, and it's not across centuries or continents as it may seem at first, and it's certainly not about an invitation to go into battle. It is an invitation to go into the battle of life, to live life fully.
I would love to give our listeners just a tiny flavor of what you're talking about. And I'm just opening the book, and this is chapter 8 called Path to the Divine. And it starts off, and you put in the top, you say prince. So you know that this is the prince or Arjuna speaking. Right. Here's what he says, and this is in the poetry of the Gita. What are inner self and divine, O Master? Can you please explain? What's the material plane you spoke of? And what is the spiritual plane? What is God to whom we all pray? Who governs the action plane? And at death, how are you revealed to those whose senses and mind are enrained? So that just gives you, like, oh, those are all the questions. What is God? You know, what is the spiritual plane? What is, these are our questions. Yeah. And it's like they're in a kind of poetry. And Isaac, I would love for you to share with our listeners, when you first came across the Gita and how resistant you were at the very beginning. So if you could describe to us that.
Well, I have to take you back in time, and I'm pleased to do so, some 34 years back. I'm a medical student, second year at the time. I was participating in a yoga teacher's training course, a month-long course, quite intensive. Just going on the course is a bold action because it's smack in the middle of the examination period, which is extremely intense. And so it is only the foolhardy boldness of my late mother who encouraged me, unlike a typical Jewish mother, go, do the course and the exams will be fine. You will be relaxed, you'll be concentrated. You don't get to study 14 hours a day as we students would do. You get to do 3 hours between the course, and you'll do in 3 hours what you would have done in 14 hours. I loved the course. It was a transformative experience for me. I loved the asanas, the yoga postures. I went there basically because I was teaching yoga to make ends meet and pay for my tuition, and I loved yoga. And so I heard there's a yoga teacher's training course and wanted to improve my act. I heard that there would be some philosophy. I was fine with that. I heard that there would be some meditation. I have practiced meditation before, so that was nice. And so I loved all of it, or I should say most of it. There was one thing which I really hated, and that was the Gita. There was an hour a day dedicated to the Gita, and for the life of me, I couldn't understand why they're teaching it or why I should be listening. And so I would barely hang on in there, waiting for the hour to be over, and not at all attracted by this Indian mythology. And like you mentioned, this war and these gods. And I was very much connected, still am, to my Jewish roots. Had high reverence for the Christian teachings and Buddhism, Hinduism, etc., but no need to go and pursue mythology. And so it was only later that the Gita really became a big love in my life. I think second only to my wife.
yes. And I can feel why I went to a reading, and when you were just reciting some of the poetry of the Gita was so beautiful. I felt it, that it really has infused your heart.
Yeah.
And you mention in the book and show all these quotes of all these people, like Beethoven and all these physicists and Goethe, the poet. Yeah. I all sorts of people that really
this
have
is, this
Gandhi.
Is really, yeah, this is really amazing. You know, when it's only much later, as I was researching towards the later than my involvement with the Gita, as I was preparing for the book publication, that I researched it more and was really blown away by the sheer number and variety. I don't think there's anything quite like it. You know, finding a book, a wisdom scripture that's 2,500 years old, and that is adored and has influenced some of the greatest creative minds in human history, in Western history. From Beethoven, as you mentioned, to Carl Jung, from the greatest theoretical physicists. What do physicists have to do with a quantum physicist have to do with Vedanta philosophy? This was news to me. I didn't know.
And Vedanta, the basic principle and basic
right.
text of Vedanta
yeah.
is the Gita. Is that what
I wouldn't say it's the basic text. There are several texts, but it is certainly a text that captures that is based on this philosophy or understanding of the highest wisdom of non-duality. And we can talk more about that.
Right, exactly. So it was just amazing to find some of these quotes and to find that Gandhi actually came in touch with the Gita in English translation. And it was translated into English back in the 1700s.
That's right. Yeah. And so Gandhi viewed the Gita as the crux of his teaching, and it really transformed his life. He met the Gita first in his English period when he was studying in England and just looking for himself, and it was away from home that he got in touch with these teachings. He would later say that it is really the ultimate scripture. If you take away all of the other scriptures, the vast hundreds, thousands of pages of India, and just the Gita remains, you'd be in good shape.
Oh, wow, that sounds really wonderful. Let's pick this book up and see what it has to say. I'm talking with Dr. Isaac Bentwich, and he is the translator of the Gita, A Timeless Guide for Our Time. And we'll talk more about that translation in just one moment. And if you want to know more about his work, you can go to his website, New Gita, N-E-W-G-I-T-A, newgita.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Dr. Isaac Bentwich, and he is a translator of the Bhagavad Gita and his book entitled Gita, A Timeless Guide for Our Time. And what I love about the construction of this book is that before each chapter, and there are like, I guess, 18 chapters, and each chapter you have this preface, and you've done the preface in the shape, the words form a vase, which is just beautiful. So it's this vase. And I'd love for you to give us a flavor of how you guide us through the reading of the Gita. And so I'm going to ask you to read at least part of the preface to chapter 7, which is the chapter of wisdom and realization.
I'd love that, and it's actually a chapter that also begins the second part of the Gita. The Gita is divided into three parts, three paths: the path of action, the path of devotion, and the path of wisdom. And so this chapter 7 is also the introduction to this path of devotion, which is really a path of the heart. We start with a path of action on how to act in the world. What do we do tomorrow morning? How do we take our groceries? What do we do when we're next insulted or angry? And then the next step up is really waking up to opening our hearts. And so this is what this vase introduction to the chapter 7, which reads. Chapter 7 introduces us to Gita's dazzlingly poetic second path, the path of devotion. From a focus on action and on how to act wisely in the world, we now move on to the realm of poetic intuition and of cultivating our emotional intelligence and devotion. It introduces us to an inner journey that is not attainable through efforts or technique or intellectualization, but through poetic simplicity and intuitive ecstasy.
So that's the first part of that introduction. So you can, I know that our listeners can get a flavor from that of how you're holding our hand. And I thought that what was important, the word that really popped out at me in this introduction, and I know that you emphasize this, that the Gita is not an intellectual journey. It's something else.
Oh, God forbid. It is a journey beyond intellect. Our journey, our inner journey into our own self, into our heart, begins with intellect and ego playing the lead role. In fact, so much so, we live our lives feeling that I am ego, I am intellect. If intellect is shut down, what else is there? And the Gita takes us beyond that, beyond thoughts, beyond emotions, into the great beyond, as the Buddha once called it, into the ecstatic silence, the divine that exists underlying this cloud of thought Think about it. We're living within this messy cloud of thoughts and an emotion. I'm angry. I'm happy. I'm thinking this, that.
I think Arjuna says the mind is like wind or something.
Yes.
What does he say?
He says the mind is difficult to control. Even the wind can be more easily controlled than the mind. How does one do it? And the Gita loving walks us step by step in doing so. Maybe I'll read a verse that describes this challenge. In describing this meditative process, there's a few verses here that are wonderful. First, describing the end goal. How does one feel when one is more in tune with oneself? When the mind, says the Gita, restrained by yoga. Yoga here means the totality of paths going inwards. Every religion, every path, in every culture, this is yoga. It's not just going to the gym in your neighborhood. When the mind restrained by yoga within itself quietly rest, 'tis then one experiences one's true self, knows joyous content in one's breast. And here is a verse that gets my hair standing on end. Then does such purified heart know bliss that's beyond what senses can. Established in this reality, never to wander again. Having obtained it, one now knows this treasure is superior to all. Knowledge so certain cannot be shaken. Though greatest of sorrows befall. And then he explains, yoga parts us from pain, O Prince, pain we thought would always be there. Practice it, therefore, determined. And then he reminds, be joyful, never despair. Such beauty.
Oh, beautiful.
And then going into the mechanics of training the mind, which is much consolation, reminding us even the biggest masters have to train the mind that this is not easy and it's a gradual process. Utterly abandon desires, Prince. Know they all arise from your thought. The wild pack of senses restrain, discerning what's real from what's not.
And now, that doesn't mean that we don't act like that, we don't do some action, but it guards us against what if we're going to do an action.
Well, the action is the center of our living, and indeed we're not advised to retreat from the world. But as we do so, let us gradually, patiently train the mind to maintain equilibrium, to maintain peace as our life unfolds and as life acts through us. Just two more verses that I owe you in order to explain the dynamics which the Gita describes. Patiently, O Prince, bit by bit, let one gradually calm one's mind. On divine inner self focus inwards, not letting the mind wander round. Time after time, mind will stray, outward by senses drawn away. Time and again, it be withdrawn, focused on inner self alone. I find this very consoling, because we'll talk now about action and how to act in the world, but this sharing that sort of puts us in the same presence of the masters. This is written for us, you and me, as well as for the greatest masters. We all struggle with this roughened mind. So it's like, for me, it's a lot of consolation, because, you know, we can talk about all of these theories, but then again, we sit to meditate, or we try to gain a peace of mind, and a ticket we got, or an insult that was there, or joy that came about, and we're berserk. And so this understanding, patiently, O Prince, bit by bit, let one gradually calm one's mind. It's a gradual process. In other words, when you're feeling my mind is out of control, I cannot control it, here comes the most authoritative guide on earth, or one of them, and says, hey, you're in good shape. This is just the nature of the mind, nothing personal. Just persevere. And that reminder previously, be joyful, never despair. It's okay. It's like this dialogue we're having with the inner voice of our soul. I'm not getting anywhere. I've been trying to practice. My life is in shambles, but more than that, I cannot control the mind. It is okay. You're doing great. Just be joyful and never despair. Time and again, time after time, mind will stray by senses drawn away. Yeah, that's the nature of the mind. Enjoy the world. Your senses are drawing it away. You need to control them as you control a pack of wolves. But this is something that requires patience. Be joyful and never despair.
So, like, something attracts our attention and we're joyful and we want to run away with that. It's about not being attached to it. It's kind of a paradox. It's okay to feel the joy, but there's a warning about then expecting the joy or then wanting to control the joy, or what is it?
This actually leads us to the starting point. We spoke about these three paths that the Gita describes: the path of action, the path of devotion or the heart, and then the path of wisdom. And so we sort of jumped into the mid section of describing the heart and the devotion and meditation. The starting point are actually actions. We're addicted to actions. We're living in a world of action, and Gita is a masterful guide for the art of living life wisely. How do you live in the world? And so perhaps one verse that sort of captures the essence of this art. Desires aside, all actions an offering. The wise rests on action, by action untainted. Like a pure lotus leaf in muddy waters, resting on water, remaining not wetted. So this is such a beautiful analogy that has been used in all spiritual traditions. We are like a lotus, says the Gita. We have our roots deep in the mud of our material nature, our animal nature, and the material nature of the world around us. But our true essence is spirit, like a pure white lotus leaf resting in muddy waters. If we act wisely in the world, not attached to our actions, not wishing or not focused on the results of these actions, I do this so that will happen. If it doesn't happen, I will be frustrated. I need to work harder so that this will happen or that will happen. That's folly. That causes a lotus to be sullied by muddy waters. We can float on the muddy waters, and indeed the wise are given as an example, by resting on action, remaining untainted. Action happens, but it is not their doing. We're encouraged to feel life acting through us. When I do something, it is not I that am doing. It is action doing itself through me. When we attune ourselves to this, we actually feel it. This is not some philosophy or, you know, we give birth to children. Did we do these children? Did we make these children? I mean, I put you in a room. Will you make it a child for me, or a grain of rice or anything? We do nothing. Nature is acting and working through us.
I'm here with Dr. Isaac Bentwich, and he is the translator of the Bhagavad Gita, Gita, A Timeless Guide for Our Time. And if you want to know more about his work, you can go to the website newgita.com, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Dr. Isaac Bentwich, and he is the translator of Gita, A Timeless Guide for Our Time. And I would love for you to share, Isaac, with us how it took you 12 years to write this translation, or yes, to get this down, many iterations of it. And at some point,